Dean Blundell Show. My name is Dean. You know, the great part about having your own podcast, your own show or network or whatever it is that you do when you produce content is being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want. Today is no different. Joining me to discuss QAnon's next move, as well as how do people get involved in this stuff to begin with, from Spear Talk, podcaster and videocaster, John Guarnieri, former Secret Service agent to Barack Obama for many years, and now his Spear Talk is probably our most downloaded YouTube podcast. It's huge. Appreciate you being here. We both have an interest in these, you call them weird. They're weird, weird things, right? Don't we? But like you and I shoot the shit about this stuff when we're not doing a podcast about other things.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, you're right. You and I will be like, for you and I might find something very weird, but what I have a tough time grasping is that it's weird for us, but those people that believe in this, whether it's a comet that's going to pick you up in a couple of days or the Q movement, or you have Jim Jones, if you do all this stuff, it's like, for those people, is it a release for them? Is it, why they feel the way they do? Why do I think it's weird? That's why I am so lost in the cult breakdown right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Q is so huge right now, and they're starting to morph into, hey, just wait till the next one. That's what the cult should be called from now on. Hey, just wait till the next one.
I'm into it, man.
Yeah, me too. I'm fucking fascinated by it. And it's not all stupidity. Some of it is, some of it isn't. But we went to the source, talked to a friend of ours who joined us for the podcast today. He is a conspirituality podcaster. He is a content provider for The Walrus. And he is bang on when it comes to trying to break down what QAnon was, how you get involved in cults, and what happens, what's needed for people to, you know, enter into that world. His name is Matthew Remsky, and he joins us at Matthew Remsky on Twitter. Appreciate you being here. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Dean.
Anytime. Anytime. Happy you could make it today. We set this up like a week ago, and I wanted to bring you on because we have a ton of questions, and I'm pretty sure that's how people figure shit out. So where do we start? I want to start with Q before we get into the hows and the whys. Since the president has, or the former president has been deposed, if you will, lost the election, every date that Q has for the arrest of pedophiles, the execution of pedophiles in the hundreds of thousands, goes by and nothing happens. Now the big thing, now that every part of Q has been demystified, is whoever is left in this tent of a cult is now saying, March 4th, guys, March 4th, don't worry, March 4th, it's coming. The executions are coming, and the president, who's actually still the president, but no one's talking about it, it's a big secret, Trump, is going to be inaugurated as the 19th president of the United States. Like that is the next big hot thing for QAnon. So why do they keep moving goalposts, and what is this?
Well, what you're saying is true for an unidentifiable hardcore percentage of the QAnon devotees that still remain. Of course, there's a lot who have fallen away, or they are trying to put their lives back together as they reconcile with their families who they alienated over the last couple of years. I don't think anybody has a clear handle on how many March 4thers there are, but what they're doing is what's been described by the social science on it, especially starting with the work of a guy named Leon Festinger back in the 50s, whose team examined a cult who suffered through the famously failed prediction of its leader. This guy predicted that the US on a certain day in December in 1952 or something like that was going to be destroyed by a flood. And of course, that didn't happen. And so they did this field work on the followers afterwards to try to determine, you know, what happens during the quote unquote great disappointment when all of the prophecy fails. Like, what do followers have to do? Are they going to regroup? Are they going to admit their fault? Are they going to blame the leader? And Festinger found that for a strong percentage of people, You know, the failure of the prophecy doesn't disabuse them. It doesn't, it actually doesn't discourage them at all. They might actually double down through a number of mechanisms that are designed to resolve what's known as cognitive dissonance. And he actually coined that term, right? So, you know, you have a way in which
the that was world, where it came from him.
That's where it comes from. Yeah. That's, oh, so you have a way cool. of, you have a way of understanding the world. Reality actually threatens or challenges that way of understanding the world. So do you adjust your way of understanding the world? No, you adjust reality in order to maintain the investment that you have, which is highly emotional, and it sometimes might involve your entire family in the particular fantasy. And so Festinger found that you know, there's a number of ways that followers will do this. They will, one cool way is that they'll spiritualize the entire thing. So there's going to be some QAnon people who will say, the storm happened, but it happened in another dimension. We didn't see it happen on January 20th. It actually happened on a higher plane of consciousness. And so it's working.
Like we the just upside down? It. Are you talking about the upside down? That's what they're referring to if you've seen Stranger Things on Netflix. It's the upside down. It's a parallel but alternative universe where all kinds of stuff can happen if you have a great enough imagination.
And if you are, your own devotion supports that alternative reality. So that right. becomes key as well, is that
like if that fits your narrative.
Yeah, but also it's like the more you believe in it, the more it can actually be so, right? So actually giving up on the fantasy that, you know, the storm happened and it changed everything in America on January 20th, but nobody can see it but you, means that you're one of the faithful ones. You're one of the people who really understands it. So that's one interesting way. Another way is that they can say, we actually just got the details wrong. We didn't bake the drops well enough. We didn't figure out what Q was saying in detail. Yeah. And so we got it wrong about the 6th and about the 20th and about October 27th, when JFK Jr. was supposed to be the new vice president. We got all of those things wrong, but now we understand more clearly that it's going to be March 4th.
Right.
And so there's a number of different avenues by which it becomes easier for people to sort of like reorganize the entire story that they're telling, rather than face up to the absolute humiliation and emotional devastation of having completely alienating themselves from both reality, their families, and their loved ones.
So effectively, what you're saying, isn't that fucking intense, John?
Totally.
Isn't that incredible how fast and how quickly Mr. Remsky, can I call you just Remsky? Remsky,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
Remsky just basically encapsulated how people got involved in this to a lesser extent, but why they still won't get out in the face of loss, after fact that's been blown up, after fact that's been eradicated, after dates to go by, just this inability to give up. And you know what it comes from? This is the incredible part. It comes from embarrassment. It comes from ego at this point.
There is shame. But there's also burnt bridges, right?
For
it's
parents,
like, it's like how many people did you say were insane? There are families who are so screwed over by QAnon that they had parents accusing each other of pedophilia during divorce actions. Right. We had kidnappings. We had people, you know, not speaking to their children or their parents anymore. Like, it's incredibly destructive. And so the risks that people took with regard to their emotional bonds were just like enormous. They were just enormous. Right. How could it be for nothing? How could it be that, you know, I was conned by something that was a mixture of, you know, I don't know, a Russian info op and, you know, a meme war coming out of 4chan? Like, how is it possible that I was so conned? Well, it wasn't. I still have the truth. That's what the conviction has to be.
Yeah. To the further that point, I'm going to play you guys something. Hopefully you can hear it and read it. I'm just going to play this for you because it's interesting to me how, you know, not just the fact that people keep believing it. It's interesting to me that there are people out there who still are taken seriously in regards to the entire thing, if you know what I mean. And let me play you this clip. This is a woman. I have no idea what her name is, but this is the most popular video in regards to what's next for Q, breaking down this 19th president bullshit. And it's 3 minutes long. I'll play you a little bit of it. But this woman has single-handedly taken over via however she's come to get this crazy bastard information, has taken over the narrative about what's next for Q. Can you hear this?
I can't, but
you can't? Okay, just yeah. A second. You're going to be able to hear it 1 second because I've messed that up too. So hold on. Just let me get the screen share and I'm going to share you the sound. Here we go, kids. Okay, here we go. Again, woman, Q, what's next?
Hello, everyone. Today's recording date is January 15th, 2021. This is another Hold the Line video. I'm going to read something to you off my screen, and I think you're going to like it.
Note the Q pendant she's got on there, too.
Yeah.
This is pretty sweet.
So hang on to your hats. Here we go.
We know people are into it when they spend thousands of dollars on Q bling.
A peaceful transition is coming. Trump will not be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States on January 20th. Trump will take office as the 19th president of the United States on March 4th under the restored republic. Let me explain. You believe you live in a nation called United States of America. This nation hasn't existed since 1871, when this country ceased to be a nation and became a corporation belonging to the City of London. Every time you see an American flag with a gold fringe and gold tilt attached to it, it represents the corporation, not the country. This is the reason you can never make progress financially. This is why the law always seems to be against the average citizen, while the rich and the elite literally get away with murder and worse things. If Biden, Harris, Pence, Pelosi, etc. are arrested for their crimes before January 20th, there will be no one to assume the presidency. Since Trump has not been certified as the presidential winner by Congress, he cannot remain president. If there is no president on January 20th, the corporation known as the United States of America will be dissolved.
Did you see that?
She's
so excited. She's so excited at the possibility that her country might be dissolved. She goes on to talk more about craziness, which really isn't worth kind of, you know, going through. But I would love both of your thoughts on that. Don't care where we start.
I guess it's more of a thought into a question. But what if my whole thing here is I don't condone the violence. I don't condone these actions of whoever you are. And I think part of the reason why I'm drawn to the Q movement, it is not in the sense I believe what they're saying, but I do, if there is corruption or bad people or pedophilia, I want that taken care of. I think that's why I'm fascinated by it. But I'm also sick of the idea that nothing has happened. So is this a means, like once this woman fizzes out, will there be another person that jumps in there to kind of take the mantle to keep pushing this along? How does the cult go away? Does it just fade out and implode? Because it seems like if once she stops talking, there'll be another head off the snake coming and they'll profiteer and do all the stuff on it. Here's the thing. It's just sound like I'm a conspiracy nut. I want to believe that there is a chance for if you truly are a bad person or there is corruption or you are doing illegal stuff, I want you taken care of. But do it in a way where it's not manufactured through dreams and nightmares concocted by people that want to will this through if there's nothing there, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I think you've hit on something essential in her pitch, which is that I think I've got a quote here, which is that this is why you can never get ahead. This is why the elites can literally do whatever they want, including murder and worse. And we're talking about this thread of really a kind of political analysis of late capitalism, of techno surveillance, of social media, of you know, governmental control that used to be opposed or is traditionally opposed in, you know, the political sphere by libertarianism, let's say. But, you know, this message that we live in highly controlled societies where we don't understand the pharmaceuticals that we're taking and we don't really trust our medical officials and we don't really trust what Mark Zuckerberg is doing. And we're totally horrified to hear the details leak drop by drop from the Epstein file. She's like, she's bang on with that, right? Like, and because conspiracies are real, conspiracies happen. Conspiracy theories are something altogether different.
Right.
The conspiracy theory is the thing that it's the fever dream that you know takes hold of historical hypocrisies and buried crimes and things that we know to be true through evidence-based research, good journalism, good science, good legal activities, and it takes and sort of projects the unresolution of those mysteries out into the world, and then sort of amplifies them to the point at which they are completely impossible for the average person to ignore. And so she's right on. There's a lot to be said for the basic political stance of QAnon, how they imagine or fantasize, accomplishing their objectives is bizarre. It's violent. It's completely detached from reality. And it has nothing to do with actually building a better world because they never actually visualize, you know, what's coming. I mean, if we ran through to the end of that video, Dean, I bet that we wouldn't really have a clear picture of what happens on March 4th. It would just be sort of like the end of a fairy tale and then the book would be closed or something like
100%
that.
100% right. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Capitol seizures. Like they thought somehow that, you know, standing in the rotunda was going to change the government. They thought that Simone Gold of America's Frontline Doctors giving her dumbass speech about, you know, vaccines containing tracking devices or whatever while standing in the rotunda, while there's Proud Boys smearing their shit on the walls, they thought somehow that that was going to form a government, that that was going to produce a vision of reality in the future. And it just isn't, it's not. There isn't really an engagement with the real world of political change. And so it's this really tragic situation in which real legitimate conspiracies are remembered, but because they're unsolved, because they're not like taken care of, because there's no justice, because there's no accountability, new conspiracies are invented on this theoretical level so that people can fantasize about some kind of justice, you know?
Fascinating. John, go ahead. No, I was just going to ask you, John, are you, because you seem to have, in our conversations, you seem to have sympathy for not the movement, but the people in the movement.
Right, because I don't know if sometimes people's feelings are hijacked for someone else's gain. So there are people, I know a ton of people that, and I'm glad you clarified conspiracy versus conspiracy theorist, because I think there was a kind of a blurred line for myself. And there are people that want to believe. So when I was in D.C. when the whole Pizzagate went down, Comet Pizza, I remember the press, the craziness around it. That's the first time I kind of was like, okay, underground tunnels. Like,
refresh people what that was, if you can, John.
Yeah, I think vaguely, basically this restaurant, bar, pizza place in D.C. by the White House called Comet Pizza was actually part of this cult thing with pedophilia and human trafficking and eating babies and this weird stuff tied to Podesta.
Yeah, some Q guy legitimately went to Comet Pizza in D.C. with a gun to go and find out if there were kids being held in the basement for sexual favors.
And that's when I first started learning about all this craziness, like what the hell is Q? Not necessarily believing it, but I wanted to find out why they're believing it. And then when the stuff like Epstein happens, where it's proven that he was into some weird, crazy stuff, illegal stuff, and this Ghislaine Maxwell stuff is leaking out through affidavits and stuff. Part of me is like, these people that did the bad things, let's find out who else is bad and take care of them. I get lost in these underground tunnels and these dumb systems, military underground bases. And I want to believe all this stuff, not because it's crazy, but I'm like, I'm just blown away. Like, it's so weird to blur truth from fiction, and then you kind of get lost in this gray area in between where it's like, what really is going on? Because I don't think all cults are bad.
Yeah. And what happens when you know enough about how protected Epstein was, not only by his money, but by the Florida DA and attorney general who like totally punted the case at that crucial point. What if you know enough about that to be horrified and you begin to, because there's no sort of access to accountability that you would have as a citizen. And let's say that you yourself have a history of, you know, trauma, or you know people who have been abuse victims, and they too have not enjoyed any kind of accountability or recourse. Wouldn't it be attractive to begin constructing a world in which you could explain how this stuff not only happened, but how the stuff was going to resolve? And one of the things that some researchers have pointed out about QAnon being so effective as a cultic movement is the principle of gamification. I don't know if you guys have heard that term, but like what it basically means is,
it's like a choose your own adventure cult almost, by following little bits and pieces and drops and this and that.
Exactly. Everybody is empowered as a quote unquote digital soldier to become the hero in some way of resolving whatever is going to be resolved on January 20th or March 4th. So everybody is kind of behind their screens of uselessness in the midst of a pandemic, feeling no political agency whatsoever. Maybe they've lost income. Maybe they've had, you know, weird sickness in the family that they don't quite want to admit that it's COVID, because that would imply that public health is wrong. But we have people in isolation being offered a way of dreaming themselves into a heroic role in which they're going to be able to solve this, you know, not only Epstein, but why, I don't know, why media seems to not offer them clarity, or why, you know, I don't know, whatever large picture they want to solve. I mean, part of why I'm stumbling is that, you know, the actual problems that QAnon are addressing don't tend to be global. They tend to be human related. It's not like, you know, if QAnon wins somehow that global warming is going to, you know, be solved. You know, because they will go on and say that, you know, the climate crisis is also manufactured. So they're really about this kind of like vision of a purified humanity, not necessarily of the earth. You know, people who are somehow renewed and made part of salvation again.
So John, can I ask you something? Do you identify, because you're military trained, right? You have great military training. You were a Secret Service officer for the president for years. Do parts of your background or upbringing identify with parts of Q?
No.
Do you have religious bent to it as well?
Well, I'm Catholic, and so I went through the whole Catholic priest scandal with all that. It made me question a lot of stuff, why stuff was covered up and everything with that, the Vatican, and what they knew or didn't know.
Yeah, that's a cover-up, by the way.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Absolutely, too. Absolutely.
That's legit.
And I guess so, to go back a little bit, that's where my anger comes in with the pedophilia stuff, because we know it's real. We know it's a real systematic problem for global elites or whoever you want to say they are, anyone's involved with it. And that's where the anger is. That's kind of why I gravitate towards that aspect of the Q movement where like, man, what if all these people got arrested? Like, wouldn't that be badass? If they're truly a bad person, I would love it. And I guess because there's no answers to a lot of stuff and there's random whatever you believe or don't believe. And it's just, that's where it kind of gets me angered in the sense of, well, now I would never protest for anything. I don't care what it is. I want to hold a political sign. I won't. The only marches I've ever done is a march for life. And that's because just my upbringing and I believe that's something I believe in, but I'm never in a situation where I would be like, okay, my cousins, my friends, let's put some animal horns on, some pelts, and let's go storm the Planned Parenthood clinic, or let's go storm the local grocery store and loot it. Like, I don't get that aspect of the, I don't have that much anger and hate in me. My anger and hate I put towards kind of researching and talking to people like yourselves about these topics, which I think in turn, more people listen to them. They can kind of do their own research and kind of, hey, maybe there's something to it, but this is the better way to go about it. And so I know a ton of people in the military that like me or law enforcement that love reading about this stuff. I know a very, very small handful of people that would be like, if they were, could get to DC outside pandemic to do that, they would be at that, they'd be marching all day around the Capitol. So those people, they're still friends, all walks of life, guys, girls, black, white. And so they all think that same way. I don't, but I also have empathy for them because whatever they're searching for, they're latching onto to get what they can. Now, where I draw the line is obviously acts of violence, trespassing, all that stuff. That's a no-go in my book. But yeah, it's very fascinating.
Go ahead.
I guess a follow-up question for you is, I remember growing up, when I go to the grocery store, you'd always see those Star magazines where it's like Nostradamus, end of the world, all this crazy stuff. Now, what was the catalyst that really blew up that type of Star magazine tabloid fodder into a movement like Q? Was there an incident or an event or a seismic shift in social media news itself where you're kind of like, let's take this Nostradamus, Noah's Ark bullshit and amplify this to the masses?
Pound them into memes and throw them across Facebook and promote the shit out of it. Yeah.
Right.
Well, social I think you're both singling out the technological function here, which is crucial. You know, there's a fantastic book that I would recommend to anybody right now. And it's by Dale Barron, Beran. It's called It Came From Something Awful. Something like how a troll army accidentally memed Donald Trump into the presidency. And it's a full history of the evolution of 4chan and its political ambivalence, actually. You know, 4chan was both the home of the hacking group Anonymous, and then it also ends up giving birth to QAnon. There's no politics per se that is central to 4chan. What's at play is a kind of nihilistic rejection of late capitalism and its failed promises, taken on by a youth culture that sees no future for itself. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that Barron really does a good job of explaining is that before there's the red pilling of the QAnon movement, there's the psychological state of being black pilled or being so sort of filled with despair at one's lack of prospect in the world, you know, and how this is like, this is parallel to incel movements and, you know, other groups of especially young men who have no hope for one reason or another and turn towards a kind of aggression, but also an irony that begins to be the hallmark of 4chan and memeing. And so how does, I mean, the content of conspirituality of QAnon has been around forever. You know, it is the Jewish blood libel. It goes back to the early Middle Ages. You know, when we're talking about aspects of it that invoke aliens, you know, that has a long history.
Class wars.
Right. That has a long history when we're talking about how, you know, it involves, you know, ideas around what medical officials are doing and how they're extracting adrenochrome for children from children. That goes right back to, you know, romantic horror fiction and, you know, Shelley and Frankenstein and all of that. And this fear that somehow modern medicine is actually there to kill you. And so all of that content is there and it's kind of ready and ripe from, you know, a huge spectrum of sources to be filtered into this supercharged, very nihilistic, very ironic social media engine that's in a darker part of the web and then creates kind of pathways and gateways towards Facebook and Twitter, where it can come out into the open. And then every time it does come out into the open, it has to be represented by somebody who is like, you know, socially acceptable. So, you know, one of the really key things that, or indicators of this was that there was a point in the fall when one of the main aggregator sites, which I think was called the qdrop.com or something like that. This was a site that was just, it was just a site that grabbed qdrops from 4chan or from 8kun at that point, and then posted them in a nicer font and in a better format.
Times New Roman. That's my favorite. That's my my least most offensive font I find. Times New Roman.
Right, but what they did, I mean, I can't remember the font, but what QDrops, whatever the aggregator was called, there was a bunch of them actually, but what it actually did was it made all of the material actually accessible to, you know, the boomers who got pilled and who wouldn't have to then sort through all of the, you know, porn and like swastika Nazi bullshit on 8kun in order to get their Q drops. And so there was also a sanitizing process that brought it to the mainstream. And that's where like our field of focus on the Conspirituality podcast comes in, because, you know, a lot of that transmission from the basement of 8kun to Facebook and Twitter happened through wellness influencers, happened through like yoga people and, you know, and interior design women on Instagram and stuff like that.
Just listen, you can crap on interior design women on Instagram all you want.
Right.
That's where I get all of my conspirituality information.
Well, they formed
all of it.
You know, there was actually such a phenomenon that
based on the pedophilia, right? Like that's what I see is most of these really strong women that come forward, whether they, you know, they've been hoodwinked or not. It's all about the kids. Those are the placards that I see.
Right. Well, and that too is an indication of the kind of sanitization and popularization impact that we've seen QAnon go through, because at a certain point, somebody figured out that you could Trojan horse QAnon ideology and discourse into something like Save the Children, which then became its own sort of minor social and political movement. But of course, it was a front for QAnon ideology. Right. And everybody who got involved with it, not everybody would be indoctrinated into full-on QAnon, but certainly they would be exposed to it. You know, and that's where we have things like you know, Daniel Laporte, who's kind of an Instagram psychologist in Vancouver with 2 million followers or something like that, releasing these videos on Instagram about how, you know, we really have to talk about Save the Children. And she quotes all kinds of like wrong facts about how many children go missing in the United States every year and who.
You know what, though? Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question? I got a few. Those facts that a lot of people put out in the name of whatever bogus cult they happen to be fronting, do you ever notice they always come with like an acute meme or like a homemade graph that says, it cites the source that says, this is from mydailyskeptic.com. Like,
right.
All you have to do is, if you're predisposed to that stuff and it catches your eye on social media, look for some kind of source. Look for a little writing in the corner that says, this came from the CDC, reputable source. This right. came from the government of Canada. This came from... All you have to do is look for the source. But you know what? The incredible part is, getting back to what you're saying, as an entry point into people's lives when it comes to cults in general, specifically QAnon, and I'll center on that because that's what we're talking about, is how it has wormwooded its way into evangelical Christianity.
Uh-huh, right.
How extremists in the Muslim faith, extremists in a bunch of different Catholic / Christian circles, very overtly religious or seemingly religious people who have to count on the second coming of Christ or whatever their Bible tells them about end times, and all the signs pointing to everything that's going on being a legitimate biblical prophecy. So how is it that so many extremists in almost every religion are drawn to the messaging behind what QAnon continues to say?
Well, I mean, if you're in one of the sectors of the institutionalized religions that has a strong, you know, end times narrative and depends upon that, then it's the language is definitely going to catch your eye. But then there's this other phenomenon of kind of proximity of concern too. So I'm working on a feature for The Walrus now that's trying to examine how various religious institutions have responded throughout the pandemic, including to the infiltration of conspiracy theories. And, you know, so there's one, I won't give too many details, but there's one source that I'm looking at where it's kind of a fringe Luddite church that is primarily interested in resisting the government restrictions on gathering. And, you know, they had a couple of run-ins with their local bylaw enforcement officers, and they made the news and stuff like that. But the thing that's happened is that this very small church has wound up coordinating its protest of lockdown restrictions alongside groups that are affiliated with QAnon.
Are you talking about the Church of God?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so we've covered that a little bit, and I'll only give you what I know. You don't
right,
have to
right.
tell me here. But Pastor Henry Hillebrand is the Church of God leader up here in Canada, from what I understand. Just outside of Toronto, Aylmer, Ontario, is that correct?
That's right.
He's got a church, and he goes to anti-mask rallies, hugs people, walks around telling everybody that the virus is no good, this is all bullshit, God's got you covered. And you don't have to give up your source. I'm telling you what I know from what
right.
I've read and what
right.
we've posted. But if that's who you're talking about, I'm very familiar with them. Very
well,
familiar.
So here's the thing is that the ideology might not. I mean, it's not a good look for any Christian church to be aligned with an anti-Semitic fever dream. Mm-hmm. But that might not be their concentration, right? It might be that it's more important for them to proclaim their kind of spiritualized medical libertarianism and to protect their ability to gather as religious people than any other reason. And so we can have these kind of like opportunistic relationships between groups that may not be entirely ideologically aligned, but they might mutually benefit each other. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's like, I don't know if you want to talk about January 6th, but
I do.
We see that in full force there. And maybe I have some questions for you, John, about how that plays out if you're watching that as an ex-Secret Service guy. I mean, from my point of view, the 6th is an amazing like intersection of
the day of the insurrection.
The day of the insurrection and the Capitol siege is like, how many groups there are there who share certain core beliefs, but they will also diverge in terms of their actual sort of relationship to reality. It's like, it was incredible because, you know, what we see now through 500 or 1,000 released Parler videos and all of the other footage is we see this, you know, very tight, well-trained core of oath keepers, militiamen, guys bringing in, you know, flex cuffs and, you know, tactical gear. And did you see, John, the picture of the four guys in, like, is it Ranger file? Going up the Capitol steps, like heads, helmets down, hanging on to each other. And like,
yeah, it's weird. Those are the same people I think they said were taking the laptops, I believe.
Right, exactly. And they, so there was like very highly organized, planned militia dude guys who are at the core of, probably at the core of the sort of the muscle that breaches the doors. But who are they surrounded by? Right. They're surrounded. And who is Jacob Chansley in relation to those guys? Right. The Q shaman, like he winds up in the Senate chamber chanting from the balcony and sincerely believing that he's changing the vibration of the nation through his spiritual activity. And then he comes down onto the floor, he goes into the dais, and then he leads like a legitimate Pentecostal prayer with what looked to be four normie guys in MAGA hats, right? And so there's this incredible convergence of diverse people who are living literally in different realities, because you're not going to see Jacob Chansley bringing in flex cuffs or packing heat. That's not what he's about. He's got his mantras, he's got his prayers, he's got his war cry,
his helmet.
He's got his helmet and he's got his Norse, he's got his Odin tattoos and stuff like that. And so he's there kind of in the fifth dimension. But there was a guy, there was some footage that showed one of the guys in tactical gear who was like a retired Air Force colonel who was like telling him to be more respectful in the chamber. Did you see that?
Air Captain Brock.
Right.
Don't wreck anything. That's where the vice president sits. Get out of that chair. This is an information organization operation. That's it. All we're looking for is info. Don't wreck anything. And that was one of my favorite parts of that insurrection video. Right. John, Matthew, one of my favorite parts was when all those normies, guys with no political or military training, other than that one guy, Mr. Brock, were looking through all the pamphlets of information, like they were going to be able to decipher what they needed to take out of there. They knew what was in there. Like how that was when, I mean, the whole day was fucked, but watching those guys leaf through official documents, like they were looking, like they knew what they were looking for, was hilarious.
They were also crib notes. They weren't even official documents. They were just like the sort of bullshit that people have in their desks, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, we should be able to use this. They had no...
like a takeout menu for a local Chinese place.
They were so disconnected from the sort of reality of what an actual revolution and coup might look like and have to accomplish and what it might mean to actually retain control over a facility.
Happened at Miramar, I think, this past weekend. Country got a legit coup. It kind of puts stuff in perspective too.
Right. And how does that happen? It happens through intense planning. It happens through people actually, you know, having sort of tactical skills. It happens through, you know, knowing more about the facilities than a tourist would, because that's basically what they were. What astonishes me. Okay. So here's my theory about the sixth is that we have kind of a, it's a partial theory, but in terms of who's there, it's like layers of an onion. And right at the central core, there's the Army Ranger guys who are in file going up the steps and they're, you know, they've got an objective and they know what they're doing and they know how to do it. And they're probably going to know how to, you know, face off against the riot police in a skillful way. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there's and then there's Jacob Chansley, who kind of is this psychedelic tip of the spear for the QAnon movement, where he like he expresses its spirituality, but yeah. he also gives it a kind of plausible deniability as well, because he can be written off as being insane. But then
but he's embraced that, Matthew. Like, that's the thing, is it, if you've read anything about this Jacob Chansley guy, or the Q Shaman as he's better known, the dude with the horns and the beard, shirtless, killer tattoos, by the way. I really actually didn't mind those tattoos. Wearing pajama pants, you got to be comfortable when you're in a coup.
Right.
But if you know anything about him, he has signed a declaration saying he was tricked by Trump. He didn't know this was all a joke. He didn't know he was being lied to. Now he believes he's been lied to, and he was only doing the bidding of the president of the United States. So it's not like some people aren't waking up. But on the other hand, maybe he even hasn't woken up. And this is just you talk about plausible deniability.
Of course.
This is just a wonderful fucking excuse for people at the same time. My question to you, John, because I'm fascinated with your inquisitiveness about this whole thing. You know a bunch of people in the military. Did you know any of the people that made their way down there? Like, did you have any inkling from, you know, things you were hearing or seeing, or offhand conversations that, hey, listen, there's something fucking weird that's going to be happening? Because, you know, my understanding was in the military community, a lot of people knew that something was going to go down.
Which it kind of goes back to my whole issue with the whole day, is that we all knew something's going to happen just based on the current political climate. Why wasn't there more law enforcement, Capitol Police, Park Police? Why wasn't there more security at the Capitol that day? None of that planning makes no sense whatsoever. I know last time we talked, you and I, on a normal day, walking up the steps, one of us farted wrong, there'd be a canine dog at us. That day, you could break in any window and walk right willy-dilly in there. If I've brought you two in there right now, walked in the main door, it would take me literally 10 minutes to figure out where I'm going to bring you to the chamber, and I've been there 100 times. So for these people, and it goes back to what you just said, they knew where they were going. Some people knew where they were going. There's just a lot of weirdness to that whole day. Now, yeah. I knew people that were going there, not for the Capitol, but to go down for his speech that day. I mean, there's a lot of people there that day. I knew people that went there for that. They lived in the area. They're conservative Republicans. I'm not going to say they're Q, but they love Trump, and they like the Republican Party. So be it. None of my people I knew actually entered the Capitol, or because there's, it's for me, I just don't get, if you want to believe these movements and Q and cult stuff, I'm okay with it. But the minute you put someone's life in danger or break the law, that's where you kind of lose my support. And that's where
has any of the past month deterred them from any of their pro-Trump Q views?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
it's wild to me.
Yeah, it's, I don't, here's the thing too, though. Like, I don't talk politics a lot. I mean, obviously, you kind of see where I'm very Republican. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, why I did like Trump, and I think for what, because he was so different than what we're normally accustomed to, which is the red, white, the red, blue, the whatever, the donkey versus elephant. Like, that's why. And I think where it went bad is where people that also hated this stuff, but needed an outlet and to gravitate towards the central figure of this movement. And I think that's where he got into trouble. But that whole day is just weird, man. And I don't want to take away from the fact that people did lose their lives and people were hurt, but I went back and listened to that whole speech just because, obviously, the news media, I don't know who to believe when it comes to sound bites. I went back to it. He actually started that, right?
Just listen, just believe me,
right? 100%.
Yeah.
And so I went back to the whole speech. The first 2 seconds of that speech, where he started talking to President Trump, he said something along that, do this peacefully. Now, where that got misconstrued, half hour later to go into the, I don't know where that's lost, but I think a lot of people, it's easy to blame someone like Trump because he is so bombastic and chauvinistic and any other word you want to say for people, that person. I guess that's where the cult thing comes in, because I don't know.
Well, don't you think that at the end of that speech though, where he was like,
oh, we're going to march down there.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing too. I played a ton of sports. Oh, I did. I'm a little older now, but when I played sports, we'd get pep time coaches and I'd be a team captain saying, we're going to run through that person's house. We're going to kill that guy. We're going to kill that team. That motivated all of us guys and girls. That doesn't mean we're going to go into your house and kill this team.
Yeah.
So I think that's where, but someone like myself, I could hear a motivational speech saying, we're going to march, we're going to take over, we're going to take over whatever. We're like, I know what that means is, hey, show up front, be a group of numbers, sing, do your other bullshit. That doesn't mean break the law or actually kill someone or storm. So that's for me where the disconnect kind of is.
Well, if you understand that, not just that day, but you're saying that, you know, his words weren't intended to result in that for those people, whether they're a Q or not. I would politely disagree. And here's why I would disagree is for 4 hours after it happened, while it happened, he didn't do shit. He didn't do anything.
Now, he did put out a tweet video that got taken down within 5
said,
minutes.
Said, I love you. This is what happens safe, when you steal home. An election. Yeah, but he says, this is what happens when you steal an election. I love you. You're special. Those things to me aren't the words actions 4 hours later of a guy who didn't want that to happen.
Now, let me ask you this. And you're right. This is why I love talking to you, because you and I are very different in certain aspects. But now with the USA, with CHOP in Seattle, and these other Democratic cities were on fire all summer in the USA, how come no one on the left that was condemning Trump condemned these actions in these cities? That's what, for me, that's where I get really upset, because, hey, if you're going to call it Trump for whatever, go ahead. But there are a lot of people that they were calling out Seattle, these Los Angeles. I mean, I had security teams all over these states.
Yeah, but wouldn't you did? You had security teams
We got called in Seattle, California, obviously clients, high net worth clients, but right outside the city of the CHOP zone or right outside Hancock Park in California at the onset of the George Floyd riots or protests. So it's like, where violence is violence, so let's call it out as it is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think that, I don't know, it makes the culpability of Trump and the causality between what he says at the rally and what happens at the Capitol so difficult is that he is a reality television president. And his relationship with the truth is at best,
strained.
Very, very, very strained, not just strained, but it's strained in the way of the person who is used to communicating through bombast, through illusion, through innuendo, through often threats, through highly emotionally charged rhetoric. I mean, so he's not really doing anything on the 6th that he hasn't done all the way through the campaign trail or all the way through his career. And he doesn't have to. I think the argument that I would make is that he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to give directions A, B, and C in order for the reality television based crowd that follows him to lose a grip on the difference between what it means to be encouraged by your football coach and what it means to storm the Capitol and kill somebody with a fire extinguisher. Because one of the things that is so confounding about the guy, about everybody who rushes in there from all walks of life, middle class, educated, ex-military, lots of ex-Air Force people for some reason, fire department guys, but lots of women as well, including some woman who flew in from Texas on a private jet.
Real estate agent, who's lost her job. And then don't forget about the lady who does just nails and lashes, who also lost her job. Yeah.
Right. So there's this huge spectrum of people that enter, and I don't think what QAnon has done over time is it's removed a kind of reality principle that would say that would let a person realize the difference between protesting and revolution and simply filming yourself fucking shit up in the Capitol so that you can post it to Parler, because that's all they did. It's like they confused revolution with posting, right? And so the whole thing is sort of technologically driven. It's a Twitter president. And so there's a kind of reality to what's happening, and there's also a kind of unreality to what's happening. And we have a bunch of otherwise reasonable people who wind up thinking that the Capitol is some kind of, I don't know, like Minecraft fucking building that they can just rush into and kick the zombies out of. When no, it's actually a real building where real
it's people, Fortnite, actually.
Yeah. It's Fortnite. Yeah. I don't know much about Fortnite. My kids are doing Minecraft, so that's what I have, right? But I mean,
I'd say Minecraft, you go in and you take everybody's shit and you break stuff and you take,
yeah, and then you turn it off, you know, and then you close the computer, and then you're like back.
It's not real.
It's not real. It's not real. And so
I opined once in a tweet how many of those people thought the insurrection was like a cosplay COD game.
It's this cannot be forgotten, because, and it goes right back to the 4chan origins, which is that QAnon itself, the poster or the group of posters emerges as a LARP, as a live action role play figure who doesn't believe what he's saying and who people are following him are kind of playing along until it crosses some sort of reality threshold and it grabs hold of people's imagination in a very incendiary way. But once it crosses over this reality threshold, it makes people who are otherwise living in reality think that marching to the Capitol armed with their cell phones is going to be a safe thing for them to do in their lives. And, you know, it's amazing. Like, they thought they were so apart from the rest of reality that somehow that them streaming their screwing shit up on in the Capitol, they thought that streaming that back to Parler would somehow be protected, would somehow be private, would somehow not, it would escape law enforcement. They thought that they lived in their own world that was technologically defined. And it's just,
with the support of the president that mass of people, like if you've ever endeavored to get drunk, you want to get drunk with a bunch of other people so you don't feel like you're doing something terrible. It's the same thing.
Right. I mean, there's that sort of emotional contagion as well. But also, I mean, the way in which this sort of bubble, reality bubble works for the person who goes into the Capitol with their phone is very much reminiscent of the fact that, you know, Trump himself is basically existing between here and his phone tweeting and then Fox News over here, surrounded by a hall of mirrors with no outside information getting in and thinking that he's winning. Right. Like, so there's this. The personality is microcosmic to the sort of unreal culture that ends up swarming over a real place known as the Capitol.
It was about 6 years ago. There's this great story that came out about these two Japanese soldiers.
Yeah.
It was about 10 years ago that wandered out of the Japanese forest and were like, okay, is it safe to come out now? Is the war over?
Right.
They've been in there for like 65 years. And their reality was, there's a fucking war going on, man.
Right.
We're not leaving this cave until we know for sure. They sat there for 65 years. That was their reality, that time hadn't gone by and nothing had changed. That this was still going. When you look for, and this is what it comes back to for me, I think, because of what I do. But when you don't look for facts, when you allow your perspective to be curated by Facebook, friends, memes, faith, religion, all the extreme parts of those things go into this real-time ability some people have to do the incredibly hard work. Now, I happen to believe cognitive dissonance is almost like living a lie. And if you've ever lied about something and tried to cover it up, I know I used to all the time. It is so much more work than it is to accept fact, accept reality. whether you like it or not, it is so much more work to fight against the reality that you're in, to try and change the reality that you're in because you don't like it, to look for other sources of information to bolster whatever it is that you want other people to believe your reality is. It is exhausting. To that end, I would ask the question, why don't people realize that? Is it their inability to let go of the things they've been taught when they were younger? Is it because Q is so closely attached, or cults so closely attach eternal life and meaning to, you know, different parts that mean something to us growing up? What's the reasoning behind that? Because to me, it doesn't make any logical sense to believe anything any man-made religion or cult would tell you. But that's just me. I'm extremely agnostic when it comes to religion, specifically man-made religion. I think they're all cults, right? We all share different experiences. Mine comes from being in an evangelical Christian background and evangelical Christian upbringing, which to this very date, I maintain is a cult. And you can't tell me otherwise, because all the same tenets are there. Give us your money. Don't do any dumb shit. If you do any dumb shit, you're not going to heaven with the rest of us. It's just, it's so exclusionary. It's weird. So how is it that you deprogram these people now? Like that's the big part. Like we're not just the reality that they're always wrong because it's a fucking joke has come and gone several times. How do you deprogram these people? Especially if they're your family and friends.
Well, I mean, kindness and empathy is key, because especially if we look at the origination of QAnon from the armpit of 4chan, it's the movement begins and I think ends in bitter, aggressive irony that is telling the world that it's stupid, that it is, you know, failing, that it is, you know, delusional. And when you are indoctrinated through a culture or a landscape that is doing that constantly as its mode of communication, it's not going to work for those who would otherwise be able to return you to a sense of reality and relationship with the world to make you feel like you're dumb, make you feel like you fell for something. Mm-hmm. And so all of the cult recovery literature says that it's the reestablishment of like close and secure attachment relationships with family and friends that is going to ultimately help. And the problem with that is that it takes a goddamn long time. People get red-pilled into QAnon over 3 days and a couple, you know, two or three YouTube, you know, auto recommendation sessions, and you know, coming back from that takes a lot of hand holding, going for walks, talking about old times. You know, it's like, John, I imagine that you've got people in your past who, you know, who have become very entrenched in QAnon, and I would imagine if you wanted to help them in some way, that, you know, you would just hang out and you would talk about the things that you had that were of mutual interest before all of this shit happened. You know, what was it like to play sports together? Or what was it like to do this kind of music? Or what was that, you know, service project that we did when we were in that Catholic church together that was really cool? Like, I mean, It's restoring the things that actually had real world value, and really supporting them. That's really the answer. And it's hard because it takes a long time, and internet online indoctrination happens super fast and super hard.
Mm.
Weird. Yeah, I'm just, again, the people I do know, and there's a couple that will send me like these. Like, I had no idea what 4chan was. I had no idea what these random things were. Like, I'm just like, when I first jumped into the whole Q thing, not jumped in, but to start researching it, I'm like, okay, I know what Q is, where we all go, whatever that thing is. And then I start seeing some stuff. I'm like, I just don't understand how someone could go down that rabbit hole and really start believing this stuff. That's where it kind of draws me. Like, I don't get that. Now, some would say people that work out a lot. I know when I was going through training, the Secret Service of Georgia, CrossFit had just kind of come out, and that was, it became one of those things where we joke about, oh, this will be the new cult. Well, little did I know, years down the line, that thing became, it had its own gyms, its own thing, its own sporting events, its own kind of like groups to gather in different regional CrossFit gyms. And so I'm like, well, these people, some would say it was a cult, yet they're doing good by working out. They're not doing anything bad.
It's amazing how many people involved deeply with CrossFit believe this stuff, though. Like you're right, touching on something incredible. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene, right, that batshit crazy chick who wants to bring her AR-15 into Congress. Like,
so does something like CrossFit that's healthy get these people mobilized, where then you can put in this theory and just have it spread like a brush fire? That's why I'm kind of like, is that how it gets in? Because I do notice a lot of fitness groups, wellness, whether it's CrossFit, right?
Wellness, and yoga, Matthew is absolutely, in my opinion, if you listen to the Conspirituality podcast, which is his podcast, this is what he does. So, Matthew, over to you. I think that that's a great question for you.
I mean, there's a long history of overlaps between physical culture, yoga, oriental type body ideas and wellness ideas, and fascism, going right back to the early 20th century. You know, bodybuilding comes out of Northern Europe, and ideas of white replacement theory were, you know, some of the key figures, leading figures of early physical culture, like Eugene Sandow he wanted, the reason he wanted to work out was because he thought that white people were dying out. And so he wanted to have stronger semen and shit like that. And he wanted to make sure that he, you know, that he and everybody who was white was able to be robust in their reproductive lives,
which is stupid, because if you want stronger semen, you just eat a whole bunch of pineapple.
Yes, or something like that. He might have even said something like that. But so anyway, he's one of the roots, one of the many roots of physical culture. He has a profound influence, believe it or not, on you know, modernizers of early Indian yoga at the beginning of the 20th century. If you noticed, you know, yoga itself, as it's taught in a group setting, is highly militarized in a lot of ways. It looks like calisthenics or gymnastics. If you add a little bit of a harder bro edge to it, you wind up with CrossFit, which is just sort of like a peak gymnastics and calisthenics routine. And so a lot of, to the extent that these fitness ideas are about like self-development and internal purification and becoming like invincible and you know, building yourself up and becoming the best possible you, that is very much sort of consonant with a conservative or a libertarian politics that basically says, I'm on my own and I'm going to do it all for myself. So it can be really hyper-individualistic, right? Which is why we wind up with somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene making herself buff so that she can chase David Hogg down the street in Washington and threaten him with a gun in her pink purse, because, you know, he's trying to get some gun laws passed because he watched all of his schoolmates get killed. So yeah, there are big overlaps between fitness culture and a kind of, you know, libertarian politics of the body that can be very, very aggressive, and can also like sort of put the body and its glory at the center of a politics, right? Like that's what fascist art is all about, is like, you know, gleaming buff men and women who are white and, you know, who are leading the nation into some, you know, wonderful horizon.
I'm one out of three, if you consider me fascist art.
Right, right.
I'm white, but I don't have that hard, glittering body.
Right, right.
Or a fascist leaning.
Right. So yeah, it's not surprising to me that wellness and fitness, there's also like an overlap in the sense that like it has an antipathy towards public health, right? Like, especially in the US, where, you know, the healthcare system is totally predatory. There's 40 million people who are uninsured. You know,
people have terrible experiences and go bankrupt all the time from normal medical complaints, where Dean and I are sitting up here in Canada, and we know we're not going to be bankrupted if we break a leg or if we get into a car accident, pretty much. We might go on disability, we might have hard lives, but we're not going to get a bill for like $500,000 in the mail from the hospital. And so right. because we have this, like in the US especially, the emphasis on physical culture is also necessitated by the fact that, you know, the country isn't taking care of people, actually. Mm. It's not really taking care of people's health needs. And so why should they trust Tony Fauci? Mm. Why should they trust, you know, the public health guys who are telling them to wear masks when they don't protect them in any other way? Suddenly doctors are telling them to stay home from work when work is the only thing that allows them to keep themselves healthy. So yeah, it's a real perfect storm in the States where, you know, fitness culture and libertarian mindset and, you know, distrust of public health all kind of like swarm together. And, you know, QAnon can light the match under that shit really easily.
It's amazing how much that one word keeps coming up, libertarian. If you're of any specific religious cult, you believe that God is the answer and not government, right?
Yeah, right.
So that is such a common thread for so many believers of QAnon or cults in general. It's, we can't trust those guys because they're in it for carnal reasons. And if we can take control of our mind and bodies, we need to use that control to be able to think for ourselves. And then people are guilted or shamed into not thinking for themselves, which is really code for, why would you believe any of that? We've been lied to for a long time. And we all have. I mean, it's a common, again, getting back to the how do you marshal troops? You make everybody feel disenfranchised. You make everybody feel like it's them against us. And then you curate the us portion with something that's easily identifiable as something that everybody can get behind.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty cogent.
Wild.
Yeah.
It's wild because you bring up a great point, Matthew. Matthew Remsky, at Matthew Remsky on Twitter. His podcast is called The Conspirituality Podcast, which you can get anywhere you get your fine podcasts. I encourage you.
I have co-hosts, Derek Barris and Julian Walker. They're awesome.
Okay. I apologize. Yeah. I didn't mean to shine your co-hosts. It's you're correct. Okay. And John Guarnieri from Spirit Talk are our guests today. And I think that's kind of a jumping off point because I think understanding it and how people get involved in this kind of stuff allows you to be a little less hardcore when it comes to dealing with these people in our lives, because listen, they're in our lives. You know, they're in my life as family and friends. It has damaged relationships, and you're not going to shame anybody into coming back to reality. All you're going to do is drive them further away. So I hope at least at some point, this was an interesting conversation for a bunch of people in how to deal with not just, you know, the ridiculousness, because it is ridiculous, but why is it ridiculous and why does it mean something to them? That goes a long way in us trying to bring everybody back into the fold of, you know, reality, which is really the point of this whole thing. Matthew Remsky, at Matthew Remsky on Twitter. Where can we find your work online? I know you've got your own website and lots of ways to get a hold of you.
Yeah, it's MatthewRemsky.com is my website. You gave my Twitter handle. We're on Instagram at Conspirituality Podcast or Conspirituality Pod, rather.
Yeah.
And I write for Jen at Medium and The Walrus.
Looking forward to your Hildebrand piece coming up.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to that, too.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And if you need any information, that's where you can get a hold of him. John Guarnieri at Silver Spear 44. I checked that on Twitter before we got here because you don't use it.
I don't.
Very often.
Yeah, it's weird. I try to use it a ton. I'm very anti-social media, but it's a necessary evil that I'm into it, though. I use Instagram for my personal page. It's at John Silver Spear. And Spear Talk is at Spear Talk Podcast.
Who's on this week?
This week is Vernon Wells. Vernon
former
G.
Blue
Wells.
Jay.
No, not the baseball player. This is actually the actor that was played Bennett in Commando, Wes in Road Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Does a ton. Inner Space, Weird Science. He's the biker Lord Humongous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great one because we kind of talk about his upbringing in Australia and how he went from a theater and opera rock band singer to movies and his relationships with Mel Gibson and George Wells and Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's just very fascinating, and he's one of the people I kind of, growing up, all his movies, I always resonated towards his villain character, and it's kind of cool to talk to him.
Well, I appreciate it. Look forward to it. You can get it at DeanBlundell.com as well. You can also find it wherever you get your fine podcasts, on YouTube as well. Silver Spear on YouTube. All you have to do is put, you know, Spear Talk or Silver Spear, and you'll find it. It's the easiest thing in the world. But appreciate you doing this. Thanks, brother.
No, this is fun. And let's do it again, too, because I have so many questions about that yoga guy, Bierkrum. Was that his name?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I just watched his thing, too. I'm like, man, there's so much. I just don't. It's amazing. So hopefully we can do it again.
He's one of many. I mean, the modern yoga industry is basically littered with guys like that. Yeah.
Just fascinating.
I may not be as. Is it colloquial? Colloquial? How do you say that word?
Colloquial?
Colloquial as y'all. I think those guys are fucked. So I'm really excited to find out more about that next week. Hopefully we can do this again. Guys, appreciate you being here. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dean.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. There you go. That is Matthew Remsky, at Matthew Remsky on Twitter. Just a good dude. I love talking to him. And if you haven't had a chance to read any of his stuff for The Walrus or whoever, make sure you do so. He is he's an awesome dude. Really, really great guy. And like packed with information too, which is why I love the guy. So check him out online. Thanks, JM, to you as well for joining us. And check out his podcast at DeanBlundell.com as well as wherever you get your fine podcasts. Thanks to our friends over at Blue Microphones, at Blue Microphones, the official microphone of the DeanBlundell.com podcast network, where you can find John and 32 other podcasts, which is fun. It's always fun. Check out. What do you like? You like this? Got that? Got this? Got some hab stuff? Got some leaf stuff? Got some spirituality stuff? We got some news? We got some sports? We got it all. Go to DeanBlundell.com for more information. Sign up for a newsletter there as well. Thanks to Ed's Fine Imports for Ed's Gitch coming soon. Gitch's own website. It's boxer briefs for the modern man. Moves with you. It's got the pouch in the front and the whole nine yards. Moisture-wicking fabric developed for performance, durable and resistant to piling. No one wants piling in their underpants now, do they? Get Ed's Gitch. Use promo code Gitch, then the number 3. If you want to order 4 pairs, you get one for free with that promo code 3 for the price of 4. Gitch 3 is your promo code at edsfineimports.com. And our friends at Domination, dominate with content. Go to dmntn.com and find out how you can produce promos, content in a matter of minutes. 72 to 100 pieces, literally in 5 minutes. You can do that with domination.com. Go to dmntn.com for more information today. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for watching the podcast. Enjoy your day.